across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
With another busy, fun, informative hour ahead on this Thursday morning, April 18th. Nice to have you along. We are going to recap last night's episode of Top Chef Wisconsin, where the chef testants put a supper club spin on things and also had a challenge using ingredients that they bought at the Dane County Farmers Market during their Madison excursion. We'll also have our Women Win Wisconsin segment powered by Motherhood for Good, and we will meet another candidate looking for a seat in the Wisconsin legislature. If you missed our last hour, we talked to Joe Zepecki about some Medicaid basics and what Wisconsin is missing out on by not expanding Badger Care to cover more working families, more new moms, things like that. You can always catch us as a podcast. Go over to civicmedia.us or wherever you get your podcasts, and you can listen back to any hour of what we do on this program day by day. Meteorologist Brittany Merlot joins us now on this Thursday morning.
Good morning.
What is it about the sturgeon? Rob from Tigerton says, good morning. It's partly cloudy and 41. Went to Shawano yesterday on work errands. I stopped by Sturgeon Park, and the people from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service were measuring and weighing the sturgeon and taking count at the dam. I've heard him mention it a few times. Katie Rosenberg, former mayor of Wausau, posted from there. Apparently, this is a thing to go see at the Shawano Dam.
Yes, it is. And I learned this about 4 or 5 years ago. I mean, people flock there. They can't wait for them. They even have cameras underwater where you can see this live happening. So,
oh, now I don't know how I feel about that. I mean, let them spawn in peace, people. I mean,
no, we're creeping on them.
I love watching the sturgeon spawn.
I don't know what the draw is, but it's a thing.
It's just imagine, like, this is taking count. Can you imagine losing count? Like 85. Oh, come out!
Having to start all over again. Rob also reminds us from our last segment that Wichita Lineman was one of the main songs on the Glenn Campbell Good Times Family Hour, the variety show he had from 1969 to 1972. I remember that. We need more Good Time Family Hour variety shows here, like Glenn did. Thank you for the reminder about that, Rob. It's overcast here on Lake Wissota, Brittany. What are we looking at across the state for today?
Oh, we're looking at those cloudy skies staying here with us, unfortunately, and actually some light rain moving into the state right now. La Crosse, Toma, Richland Center, you're starting to see that throughout the morning hours. This is going to spread throughout the southern half of the state and even in towards portions of Wausau area and in towards Green Bay, too. I do think Eau Claire, maybe Superior, might miss out on some of these showers, but it will be a cloudy day. Winds are breezy up to about 25 miles per hour this afternoon, and we're actually going to see temperatures only rising to highs in the upper 40s to maybe we'll squeak out some mid-50s. But the mid-50s are going to be further north in the state, where you're going to see less rain. So we're going to be stuck in these cooler temperatures. And in fact, if you have done any gardening, I hope not just yet, but if you have plants outside, we are going to see a frost possible tonight. And by tomorrow night, a freeze. So those colder temperatures dropping below freezing through the overnights. But a cooler weekend ahead, but a sunny one. This is our last wet day we have to deal with.
Now, I know that a meteorologist does not equate to horticulturalist, but I'm sure every year about this time you get the, can I start planting this yet or that yet? And, you know, here's always my answer till Memorial Day. No, you know.
Wait, yep.
Just, you're never going to go wrong by waiting a little bit longer because, again, people thought we were all done with the freezes. Maybe not so much.
Not so much.
All right. Are you a Chris Stapleton fan by chance?
I love Chris Stapleton, yes.
Did you catch him on Saturday Night Live?
I was just going to mention that.
I did not. I was about to say, Greg was just playing in the background during the break.
Oh, you can hear that? I'm sorry.
Yes. No, that's fine.
I thought you can't hear that.
He thought we had this psychic connection all of a sudden. He just had the wrong knob turned. But yeah, I didn't give any credit this week to say Chris Stapleton took part in a skit, one of the filmed skits. He was really good in there. He really played along with the bit. I thought it was great.
Yeah.
So he can act. He has a beautiful voice. My goodness.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I'd love to sing and do that kind of stuff, but I just look too much like him at this point that people would be like, get your own look, bro.
Oh, no, no, no. That's all over. Chris Cruzy, you know, from up in Barron area, he was big on, was it The Voice, I think? No, there's always room for one more in country singing.
We got this, Greg.
You got the look.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
Thank you, Brittany. Have a great day.
You too.
All right. Coming up yet, we're going to talk about our Women Win Wisconsin segment coming up at the bottom of the hour here. In a state that continues to be closely divided, which is, again, not the world's biggest surprise, but the latest Marquette poll came out yesterday and again showed, you know, the extent to which we have these divisions of whether you're talking about former President Trump or President Biden. Everything is somewhere in that 51-49 to 50-50 realm. Another thing that hasn't changed, feelings on abortion, where again, you have more than 60% of those surveyed are opposed to the Dobbs decision, which repealed the abortion care rights that were in Roe v. Wade. You have job approval numbers that, frankly, I've just never been into because those come and go. And, you know, you just look at Ron Johnson. Ron Johnson has never been above water in public opinion polls about a favorable impression of him. And yet he's won three elections statewide for all kinds of nefarious reasons, but he's won them just the same. And so, you know, we're just going to acknowledge that there was a poll and say, look, by being this closely divided, it still just shows how much you matter, how much your vote matters, and not just in November, but in these spring elections that we just had that determine, you know, who's on the school board, who's the mayor of your city. And again, this coming August, where there are going to be primaries. There are going to be primaries in some of these new legislative districts, and there are going to be primaries for Congress. You have multiple Republicans running in the 8th Congressional District in Northeast Wisconsin. We have multiple Democrats running in the 3rd Congressional District in Western and Central Wisconsin. So that primary on August 13th is going to mean a lot as well in a state that continues to be divided to the point where your vote counts more than it would pretty much anywhere else. The Wisconsin Supreme Court yesterday listened to arguments in a lawsuit by Governor Tony Evers about how much power should be held by the legislature through its committees. It's a case that the governor brought against the Republican-controlled legislature, and it could have a major impact on exactly how state government functions. Evers is arguing that the legislature has a very powerful joint committee, meaning it's got assembly reps and senators on there. So instead of an assembly finance committee and a Senate finance committee, it's a joint finance committee that writes the state budget and makes all of the key decisions about spending in that budget process. It's controlled by Republicans 12-4 because of gerrymandering. And Evers is arguing that that committee is exceeding its constitutional authority and effectively acting as a fourth branch of government, because even though the legislature, the full legislature, approves a budget, the Joint Finance Committee has set up the process in a way that the money isn't actually released unless they take a vote on pretty much every spending request. And the governor is saying that's too far. That essentially makes the Joint Finance Committee a fourth branch of government, when after the budget, it should be up to the executive branch to put a budget into action. Progressive Justice Jill Karofsky questioned whether the budget committee has too much power. She said, there doesn't seem to me to be any limits whatsoever. There are zero guardrails here. But conservative Justice Rebecca Bradley questioned whether a court ruling could apply across a myriad of legislative committees and their powers. She said, you're asking us to make a big shift, and added the court cannot slice and dice the separation of powers between the executive and the legislative branches. Well, I get that that sounds like a daunting task, but it also clearly seems to me that this is exactly what has to happen. that a Supreme Court has to step in and determine where separation of powers ends between the legislative and the executive branch. And there's a reason why. The people who founded Wisconsin state government, like the people who founded the government of the United States, did not imagine the level of bad faith and abuse that we would actually see someday from our legislative branches. You see it, of course, in gerrymandering, which is the rigging of maps so that politicians choose their voters rather than voters choosing their politicians. We've certainly seen it in the abuse of the impeachment process, both at the federal and the state levels. We've seen it at the financial level, where between the legislative and the judicial branches, unlimited corporate cash has been allowed to, you know, flow into American politics. And so it seems clear that to the extent that any Supreme Court can, it needs to look very carefully at whether a committee of the legislative branch is going too far, is in fact abusing its power. And it certainly seems here that once a legislature approves a budget, that's the extent of it. A legislature does have oversight. There are oversight committees, but that's an oversight committee is not there to micromanage and to rubber stamp every dollar of spending that's requested. All you're doing now is you're cheapening the value of your oversight committees, much like Republicans in Congress are doing with their oversight committee, the one that keeps looking for reasons to impeach President Biden and did impeach Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas, which yesterday the Democratic-led U.S. Senate said, get out of here with that. There was no high crime or misdemeanor, and voted it down. Mitch McConnell said, oh, you're ruining the traditions, said the guy who held up or sped up Supreme Court nominations to suit his political will. So with this much bad faith, with this much abuse happening in power, if one faction is not going to police itself, then perhaps we do need to have these court debates to figure out a way to make government run more smoothly. The latest edition of the Vibes Only podcast is out. You can catch that over at couriernewsroom.com. Brian Derrick and Glennis Mahar talk about the first week of the Trump trial, and then they'll visit with our friend Cam Stevenson from the Copper Courier in Arizona about that state Supreme Court decision that brought back an abortion ban from 1864. That's the Vibes Only podcast from Courier Newsroom. Wherever you're listening across Wisconsin, when you're here, you're up north. Back in a bit. If you missed it earlier, Greg and I did declare that today is a Yacht Rock alert day. Some TV stations have like a weather alert day. We have a Yacht Rock alert day. Just days when there's just not that much in the daily history lesson that lend itself to bumper music. So we go for the comfort food that is Yacht Rock.
I'm going to find a boat, a yacht horn. That's our warning.
Today is a Yacht Rock alert day. We just needed that. We were talking in the last segment about Second City Television, yeah. SCTV, and somebody on the text line sent some of their favorite skits. There was the Battle of the PBS Stars. They write, "Who can forget the wrestling match between Julie Childs and Fred Rogers?" I don't think I'd seen that one.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
And then there was the 3D House of Beef, and Joe Flaherty had the scary movie one.
Count. The one that keeps popping up on my feeds are when Rick Moranis, Eugene Levy, and John Candy play like schoolboys in a band called the Recess Monkeys, and I pulled it up. It sounds like every battle of the band you ever went to in high school.
Oh my gosh.
But wait for it. This is the best part. It's, here goes.
Gone, gone, gone. She's been gone so long. She's been gone, gone, gone so long.
Gone, gone, gone. She's been gone so long. She's been gone, gone, gone so long.
Gone, gone, gone. She's been gone so long. Gone so long.
I mean, it's a solid band, but they're just ridiculously terrible singers. It's wonderful. I love it. Yeah.
God bless them. That was fun, and we appreciate getting the reminders about some of these shows that we've missed. And the same goes with Yacht Rock. We're gonna keep playing the same old stuff, but there's such a long list. Well, no, I take that back. It's a defined list because there were only so many songs that were recorded in the late 70s, early 80s. But I love going to it because it's called Yacht or Nyacht. And you've got to, you know, look at these songs and say, do they qualify as yacht rock? Which is very subjective.
For me, if it's a yacht rock song, there's something in it when you hear the first note of this, you just go, oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
And you know you know that every trouble you have in the day is like gone for 3 minutes.
It's so true. So there you got our comfort food, and I know already. I can just see the email or text coming in. That's it. That's the last straw. I'm out of here. To which you say, I'm sorry. We'll miss you.
That's the that's how weak your camel's back is, my friends. Yacht Rock. Okay.
That's what's gonna do it. All right. We're sorry. As we were unpacking the news in our last hour, I made mention of how in Congress right now there is going to be a vote on the aid packages for Ukraine, for Israel, for Taiwan. These are all things that should have happened last October when they first came up. But 6 months later, the infighting among House Republicans continues to the point where Mike Johnson, who could not barely even dream of being Speaker 6 months ago, is now in danger of losing his job for actually wanting to help one of our allies and, you know, thwart the continued Russian aggression in Europe. And it reminded me with Mike Johnson bringing this up and knowing that he's going to need Democratic votes to get this done. And by the way, pretty much anything that has happened since Republicans took control of the House has needed Democrats to get something done. Even though Democrats had an equally thin majority during the previous 2 years when they were in power. But it reminds me of something called the Hastert Rule, named for Denny Hastert, a past Republican Speaker of the House, who later it was learned was a raging pedophile and has been and had been in prison for quite some time. But he had this rule, and it was used before with Newt Gingrich and others, but it was named for him, that said nothing would come to the floor of the House for a vote unless a majority of the majority party was for it. Now think about that for a second, because it actually renders moot or useless or impotent, you know, everybody in the minority. It says their votes don't matter, a theme I mentioned from the last segment, the disregard for the votes of others. Now, I'm not saying that the U.S. House of Representatives has to be on the same footing as, you know, your student council in middle school, where everything is a debate club and everybody gets a vote and that there are no parties and there are no factions. No, but there are times when leaders have to lead. And sometimes that means leading not by party affiliation, but by having the most people in your particular chamber, the House, the Senate, student council, whatever the case, and lead that way. And so the opposite of the Hastert rule might be some of the words of inarguably the most effective Speaker of the House ever, one Nancy Pelosi, who in 2007, having become Speaker of the House, put it this way. She said, I'm the Speaker of the House. I have to take into consideration something broader than the majority of the majority in the Democratic caucus. We have to talk it out, see what is possible to get a job done, and do that together, end quote. Pelosi spoke repeatedly about wanting the minority party to engage in the legislative process. That's how she viewed the speakership, and that's how she viewed the quality of leadership. Tip O'Neill, prior to her, often let Republicans take the lead on votes, even of things he did not like, But he did it, again, for political reasons. He said, go ahead and let them have this. He believes that he's giving them enough rope to hang themselves. Go ahead and show that this is your idea. We'll ask the voter, do you like that idea or do you like ours better? And again, that's the way leadership and electoral politics should be working in our country. Instead, you have Speaker Mike Johnson with just enough Republicans now saying that they may try to get him booted as Speaker, and then we'll find out if he gets to save his job by relying on Democrats to vote for him, or if Democrats again say, this is not our fight, you all figure out amongst yourselves who should be Speaker, even though you're all terribly divided amongst yourselves. There were already amendments being offered that come out of, you know, silly season by one Marjorie Taylor Greene. One of them, I don't have it in front of me. I just know it involved, building a space laser somewhere on the southern border. And there was another one that said anybody who votes for aid to Ukraine must also sign up to be part of the draft for the Ukrainian military. I don't mind if somebody wants to be pro-Russian in, you know, their speech and in their positions, even if you're an elected person in office, you do you, but you're going to have to stand and be accountable to the voters at some point when the question becomes, who are you with here? Are you with the United States and its allies or not? And this really all kind of helps set up the premise of the movie Civil War that Joe Zepecki talked about in the last hour and that I went to go see late yesterday, just on a lark. And so in probably tomorrow sometime, we'll talk a bit more about that and what the movie Civil War says about where we could end up going in this country if we don't tone down the rhetoric and try to come together rather than intentionally divide based on party and ideology. Motherhood for Good is coming up next. You're up north. Welcome back. It's a Thursday morning, 7:35 almost here, and we're having one of those days where you hit the button on your computer and the computer says, you know what, you're using too much CPU. I'll get back to you in a little bit. So we'll just keep typing in some information here. I'll eventually remove that banner on screen that says we're in a commercial break. And oh, look, it's working now. And here are my friends from Motherhood for Good, Danielle Scampini, Lynn, Nicole Slavin here, along with their special guest, Emily Sefos. Ladies, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Danielle, I saw you last in a photo in the Journal Sentinel when you had an event involving a couple of women, including one that we talked to the other day, one from Texas, one from Louisiana, talking about the danger to health of these abortion bans. Tell us about the event and who you met and what you learned.
It was really a really cool event. You know, we were contacted by the Women for Biden-Harris coalition of the Biden-Harris campaign. And, you know, they're really focusing on getting these stories out there, particularly to suburban women who really care about this issue and maybe people who are, you know, hearing a lot more about the issue, but haven't really thought about all of the different circumstances that surround abortion. And it was just like really powerful to hear their stories firsthand. And we had a really engaged group with us. And they're so wonderful, so inspirational. And it was really like a really great opportunity to partner with the campaign. And so we were just really, really honored that they reached out to us and that we were able to have that conversation.
And it's conversations that are kind of the theme here, because again, you know, political ads have their place and there's going to be a whole lot of them. But when people want information, the chances are they're going to get that in conversations like what you helped facilitate, or the kinds of things that candidates sometimes do one door at a time. And that's where we bring in Emily Sefos, who's a candidate for assembly in District 56. Emily, remind us where the district is, what it's made up of.
Sure. So it changed a little bit with those lines, but we're looking at parts of North, like very North Appleton. We're going out into Shiocton, Black Creek, Hortonville, bits of Grand Chute, Greenville. So it's become much larger and more, includes more rural communities, and also includes some of those developing communities just outside of the Appleton area.
And has the additional challenge of knowing when to say crick and when to say creek, depending on the place. I remember one time in Reidsville in Manitowoc County, where my wife went to school, and I pointed out, you know, Mud Creek, and she's like, no, Mud Creek, you know, get it right. So, so Emily, we know that candidates, you know, knock on doors and have these conversations, and we'll get to the importance of that, but you're also using another mode of communication, and that would be the videos through social media, whether it's on TikTok or on Instagram. They're called reels, and sometimes they're stories on Facebook. And you were already getting compliments from Nicole and Danielle about this. So tell us about why you made the choice to carve that time out, and what you're saying in these videos that you're hoping people in your district will see.
Yeah. I mean, first I just want to shout out, like, Motherhood for Good. You all are incredible. I'm so honored to be in this space with you.
Amen.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Doing so much good work. But I think, like, the importance of those, like, is to make everything, like, more accessible to people, because politics is like this big ambiguous idea, and we just say it doesn't work. But I think that there's a lot of learning that we all need to do. So one of my goals is, as I'm going along here, to, like, update people. Like, yesterday I talked about the fact that we're gathering signatures. Like, what does that mean? What is the process? Because I think that we don't understand how connected politics is to everyday life. And so, like, that's the goal of those. And I'm really trying to make it that it's something that is relevant to the people living in this district, but also applicable just to the general population. And it's fun as well.
Well, I think it's great. And Emily, just to follow up on that, I know for me, I was always curious too, of how many signatures do you need, and, like, how does that work? And I think you did a really good job of kind of explaining that, hey, depending on what you're running for, the amount of signatures you need, it changes. But back to Pat's original thought, you've been doing this for a while. This isn't new for you. You're very good and flexible on, creating the videos and whatnot. I'm curious, do you get a lot of questions back from people that way, or how is that shaping how you're approaching your campaign?
Yeah, I think that that's a great question. The reason that I did that video yesterday is because I've gotten questions like, I just voted in the April election and you weren't on my ballot. So when am I going to be on the ballot? Important to know. But how do we get there? I'm trying to be responsive. I had a meeting, for example, with Grand Chute's fire department yesterday. So I really want to do one about, like, how are we funding fire departments? What are the issues they're facing? And then connecting that to what is being done, like, that is beneficial in Madison, and what are the gaps? How can we fill them in?
Yeah, that's really helpful. And, you know, I think that it's so important to answer those questions, because even people like us who are more engaged can get lost in, like, the minutia of that. And, you know, it also does make that connection of, hey, you might not think anything is getting done in, you know, local politics or whatever, but, like, this is what actually affects your life. And, like, here's right. how it can actually, affect you, affect your families, all of that. So what would you say, just on that?
Yeah.
That topic, when you're engaging with voters, whether it be through, you know, online or at doors or whatever it is, what are you considering kind of your kitchen table issues, your, you know, kind of things that you care the most about that you're going to be advocating for?
Right. That's a good question. I think I'm trying to be a very responsive community-centered campaign. So some of the things that I'm hearing from people are our public schools. We had two in the district that went to referendum this last April election. And thankfully they passed, but it's like operational budget things. Also, like, what does it mean to, I think the district is unique in that we have Greenville, Grand Chute that are growing at a rapid rate because of their proximity to Appleton, but we have a lot of smaller communities that are feeling like left behind. So shared revenue, like, what does that look like? How does it actually impact? And those strings that are attached that I'm finding out more and more actually kind of hamper the efforts of our larger towns. Like, how do we develop in a way that benefits everybody. So that's something that we're taught, that I was talking to a community leader in Greenville about. I am a mom. I am a biological adoptive mom, survivor of sexual violence. I'm not afraid to be out there with that. And I think our freedoms are something that as well that we all hold dear to our hearts as Americans. And it's something that I want to protect. And that does include reproductive freedom. So yeah, that's kind of what I'm not afraid to say the things. These things are important and they matter to people.
Well, if we learn nothing after the Dobbs decision, it's that, you know, everything has to be on the table. People knew so very little about the full extent of abortion care. They thought it was just this one thing by and large. And, yeah, you know, that kind of education is important. On the topic of the school referendums that you just had, and there will be many more.
Yeah.
I wonder how you approach this as a candidate who has to take probably you have to say what I'm about to say in a nicer way than what I'm going to say, is if you have school referendum fatigue, don't take it out on your school district on the referendum vote. Take it out on your legislator in November who has set up this system that requires all these referendums because, Republican legislators have been starving school districts for years. But you have to say that. You have to say that a little nicer than I just did, I suppose.
Well, such a good
point. We all like you, Pat.
Yeah, we're like, we're good.
I'm going to take that with me on the trail. I like to talk to people about that because honestly, like the incumbent and that the party is going about saying historic increases in public education, historic increases in shared revenue. Well, you're talking to school districts that can't afford, that have to do operational budget referenda. 91 of them again. So like, obviously there's a problem there. There's a gap that exists, but it's that education piece. So it's really like piece by piece, door by door, and also putting it out on social media and also the LTEs. Like I'm really trying to connect all those dots because that is something that needs to be done more often.
Well, that's great. And I think building off of that, I know, Northeast Wisconsin, that's, you and I are both up here. It's different, right, than other parts of the state. There are very urban, suburban areas, and then it gets rural really quick. And knowing you have a new district, can you talk to us about how you're making sure you're not just talking to those that are right next door and easiest to get to? I mean, you have a really interesting makeup of your district, and I know you're someone who does a very good job of, you're so open and it's easy to talk to you. Can you kind of walk us through your approach to how you're reaching out to everyone in the district?
Yeah, so I'm currently at like doing a tour around the district that's collecting nomination signatures because my goal is not to like make them The easy button is to go to North Appleton or to Greenville Grand Chute where the houses are closer together. And I've got more connections there because that's where I spend a lot of time. So I'm going today, I'm going out to Hortonville. Next week, I'm going to New London and Shiocton. And those are people they're feeling left behind because no one's ever been out there doing anything. So I'm touring around the district to get the signatures and also to listen to people. I think that's so important, not to come out, preaching my gospel truth, but just saying what hurts, how can I help? And that's the goal.
It's a great thing to keep in mind because when I won my seat in 2006 and unseated a longtime incumbent, instead of just going around Eau Claire and then some of the cities along Highway 29, Stanley and Thorpe and places mm-hmm. like that, even though my staff wasn't really happy about it, I insisted on, getting on all the dirt roads and stopping at farms. And you would not knock on 100 doors in a day. You'd get to a handful of farms, and every one of them, one or two weren't so nice, but every one of them was like, nobody has ever come here asking me for my vote. And they want to feel listened to. And so I'm glad to hear that you're doing that. Danielle, do you have one more pointer question and we'll wrap things up?
Yeah, for sure. And I was just going to say, Pat, I've actually had that experience door knocking here, like in Waukesha County as well, because I think we don't want to take voters for granted who are a little bit further out or, areas that you might consider like, too far gone, red. Like there are voters who want to be engaged everywhere and you are a representative for everyone. And so we should hear from everyone. So I guess just to wrap up, Emily, what would you say are things that people who want to support your campaign can do for you?
Thank you for asking that question. I think that, again, I'm trying to be very, if you're in the district, like the best thing you can do is honestly like sign up to volunteer because I'm up against someone that's been in office for over a decade. So it's getting my name out there. It's people vouching for me that live in the community. Like have that conversation with me. Let me earn your vote. Let me tell you where I'm at on the issues that matter to you. And then be brave with me. Step into the space because it's going to take all of us to flip this thing. And it's doable. And I'm really, really excited because people are fired up out here. But I need people to be brave with me. So that's what I'd ask.
What are you getting in terms of friends and family, you know, are they kind of like, okay, well, I don't know why you're doing this thing, or is this kind of a, okay, what am I going to do? How am I going to pitch in for this?
I'm fortunate to have, like, I've got three kids. So a partner that is very supportive is like, I will take those kids. And that's lovely. It's important. Mm-hmm. But I think that people, like, when you remind people that politics is supposed to work for the people, and that you want to be that, you want to hold that truth as your North Star, that's, people gravitate toward that. And I'm not doing the politics as usual kind of approach to this campaign. I'm really trying to make it responsive and people-centered. So I'm really excited.
We have said many a time here that part of the whole philosophy behind Up North News was to deliver news and information with a supper club vibe. That basically, if somebody would stop me in a supper club and say, Pat, what's the deal with this? And they may not agree with everything I say, but they know I'm not going to lie. I'm going to tell them what I think and then mm-hmm. let them kind of decide that on their own. And we're trying to do that on the radio here as well. And I really think that that's the same kind of vibe you bring in to talking with people is, again, it's no different than if they bumped into you at the grocery store and said, Emily, what do you mean? I thought the school's just got a record amount of funding. And then you can explain it without all the division. Now, having said that, I was going to ask where your favorite supper club is, but I don't want you picking favorites here. But you know, do you have some good choices there where you get to talk to people?
We do. Yeah. I'm doing some supper clubs and some taverns and stuff like that. Like just really showing up where the people are. So Romy's is a good one out of town a little bit. And then there's a couple more in Triacton that I haven't gotten to quite yet. This district is pretty new, but I'll be around. I'll report back.
The day I knew.
Caffeine slaps for you, Emily.
Oh, yeah.
Right. See?
That's bad. I'll take it.
Look at these. The day I knew I was going to win that election was the Sunday prior. I went into a bar in Thorpe, I think it was, and there was a polka band going. And I just jumped right in and started, doing polkas with a lot of the folks that were there. And that's good. So put on your dancing shoes as well as your walking shoes, because you never know what comes up next on the campaign trail.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much. I appreciate being here.
Thank you. Emily Cephalos, good to see you. Danielle, Nicole, so great to see you guys again. We'll talk to you next week.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thanks, all right. Everybody.
We're going to continue that supper club vibe coming up next with one Luke Mathers as we recap Top Chef Wisconsin. Next, you're up north. Then get back to business. Do for love.
This one is top of the charts for me when it comes to these kinds of songs.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Mathers, as being part of the original lineup from Up North News Radio, knows full well that there are just days when you got to go with comfort food and play as much Yacht Rock as humanly possible. So thanks for being here for our Yacht Rock Thursday.
Not a problem, Pat. Glad to be with you on this Thursday.
You're liking Greg's lip syncing?
Greg's having a blast.
Trust me, if I was singing, you guys would be like, just can we shut his music mic off from here, wherever?
Oh, I thought you did. I thought you were muted and just were singing.
No, I'm not going to bless you with these pipes right now.
You're not going to bless us. All right. Mr. Mathers, we're here to discuss Top Chef from last night and the quick
table for three?
Before, yes.
Yeah, table
three
for
of us
three.
At the supper club.
I'll just stick to water.
Where we're served up by the... Chef Testance. Oh, there goes Greg. All right. He's out.
He's gone. He has left the building. Bye, Greg.
Okay. I'm just going to put this. Okay. Every time you say that, Pat, and I know you're doing this, you say it with just you turn the stank up to like two. You always say Chef Testance. You don't
say, he's not trying yet. He's
yes,
not trying
he is.
To subtly add. No. I'm saying he's not trying subtly to add it in. He's very, very doing it intentionally.
It's yes. a thin, it's a
it wasn't
thin layer to go.
Aggressive?
No, it's not passive aggressive. It's just aggressive.
Just aggressive.
It's like a thin layer. It's like when you walk through the misty rain, you're like, I don't think I'm wet, but I am. And you're like, oh, I think Pat just said Chef Testance.
So getting back to the program now, it all started last night's episode at the Dane County Farmers Market around the Capitol Square last summer when they were filming, and it involved buying the ingredients first and then figuring out what they were going to make. Is that something, Mr. Mathers, as a more regular viewer than I am of the series, is that was that like a new curve, or does that happen every now and then?
It's not an uncommon curve. I feel like there's definitely a lot of opportunities in cooking contest shows like Top Chef, where you will have that kind of, oh, well, you thought you were doing one thing, but now you've got to do something else. And I think all of the contestants were doing a really good job taking a variety from the Dane County's Farmers Market on last night's episode of Top Chef, because they knew that there was going to be a twist. Like, they knew it was coming. It was announced to them that you got to shop, and then you're going to find out what your challenge was. So I almost wish they hadn't have mentioned that that there was a challenge to be aware of. Like, it would have been just great. Go spend $100 at the farmer's market and you'll learn more later, kind of thing.
And what they learned was that they were going to pair their whatever they bought with a different sauce. There was a longtime chef at the University of Wisconsin, Carson Gully, I believe was his name.
Yeah. And as somebody that worked for UW Dining, I know Carson Gully and his recipes very well.
You do?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
The fudge bottom pie that UW Madison is pretty well famous for, if you've ever been in any of the residence halls or at any of the dining facilities on campus, is a Carson Gully recipe. So Carson's is actually one of the dining halls on campus as well. He has this namesake in Lakeshore, and they re-gutted the whole thing while I was living on campus. So I was across from it, and my morning routine was morning construction at Carson's, waking me up at a wee hour of the morning for a college student.
I did not expect my mind to be blown like this, that you actually knew who this was and knew of the reputation. Well, anyway, he had all these sauce recipes, and so everybody got a different sauce recipe, and then whatever you got at the farmer's market, you had to pair it with it. So there was a raisin sauce, a horseradish sauce, a tartar sauce, of course, a Creole sauce that Charlie made and did extremely well on, and that's foreshadowing, by the way. And they were doing all of this at Etoile up on the rooftop overlooking Capitol Square. Mm-hmm. And I really liked at the end when they were all done that there was some of the crowd down below clearly knew what was going on and applauded them. I thought that was a nice little Midwestern touch of friendliness.
I know what day this episode was filmed, because Kelsey and I almost went to the farmer's market that morning. We went and grabbed brunch somewhere else before meeting up with some friends. And then we saw on social media after the fact that Top Chef had been filming around the square that Saturday morning. And I've been kicking myself since that late August farmer's market that I skipped.
I was worried that there may be an outbreak of violence, because you know that farmer's market, everybody walks in the same direction and kind of at a leisurely pace. And these guys were on the clock to get so many. So they're all barging in like, pardon me, excuse me. I thought somebody was going to get checked, or maybe get an elbow or something like that. But
it's funny that you recount the challenge that way, Pat, because Kelsey and our friend Jennifer, who we were watching the episode with last night, they were like, wow, this really, really paints the farmer's market as a calm experience. And they're like, that's never what it's like.
Everyone for themselves.
It kind of is.
Yeah. I am one of those guys that will yell wrong way when people are going the wrong way.
Oh, you're so, that guy? Awesome. I didn't know.
Now we know who that guy is.
Somebody has to enforce the rules, okay? If there's people breaking the flow of traffic, they should be informed.
If you're watching the live stream, Luke's little title says, future Top Chef sampler should say, current farmer's market snitch. So
no, hall monitor. It's a hall monitor thing. It's been a long recurring aspect.
Did they incorporate the warm spicy cheese bread at all?
There was a bag of it featured on the farmer's market, but nobody used it, I believe, in the cook.
Which is good. Disgusting. Then more for me and for the rest of us then. So then it was off to the Harvey House Supper Club, which I have to admit I have not been to yet, but now it's on my list. And they had to, this was the new challenge now, so they were given $1,000 to go to Whole Foods and get all the ingredients for a dinner, a supper club type dinner. So there had to be a relish tray, a beef dish, a chicken dish, a fish dish, and a dessert for, what was it, 40 people?
40 people, 40 and the people, judges.
And the judges for $1,000.
And if, that $1,000 at Whole Foods disappeared real quick.
Oh, did it ever. And it led to a little bit of conflict and things like that. But then we get to the part where they made all kinds of dishes with a supper club flair, but you're never going to see them on a menu up north. There's a chicken katsu with Szechuan mala spice with a chicken liver mousse, apple miso mustard sauce with a red cabbage relish. No, but they
did. It's fine dining with a supper club twist is what you get.
It really was. And when all was said and done, Dan from Milwaukee was the winner with his relish dish. And Charlie, who'd won the sauce competition, actually was the one eliminated for his dish. And so on they go to whatever's next.
I don't think I saw a teaser for this next week.
I don't think I did either. So we'll all have to find out together here. So anyway, there's your little recap from one Luke Mathers. Thank you so much, sir.
Absolutely, Pat. Always a pleasure. And Greg, glad to be with you too.
I will destroy you.
Up North News is the Wisconsin digital outlet for Courier, a pro-democracy news network, building a more informed, engaged, and representative America. So there. Enjoy your day.